in elections, we always talk about how it's money and popularity. And that's what drives candidates is if you got a lot of money, you got a lot of name recognition, it's really pretty easy to get elected. But in our history, we've had a scenario where that is limited. There's a limitation on money and popularity to get onto the ballot. And we're still kind of doing that in the state of Utah. So we're going to talk about that today.
The Family Freedom Podcast, voices of family and freedom. Now here's your host, Wendy Hart.
Today I am joined by Casey Vokes. Casey is the father of six, and he is the former chairman of the Utah County Republican Party. And what's interesting about Casey is that he was elected chair of the second largest county Republican Party in Utah at the age of 24. And that kind of goes back to this point as to how do you get involved when you're just an average person? So welcome, Casey.
Thank you so much for having me, Wendy.
Tell me, most people are not familiar. They hear about caucus convention. These sound like boring terms, and they were really boring when I first heard about them, right? But it's really a grassroots vetting process, I would say. And so explain to people, what is caucus and convention, and why is this a cool thing?
So in Utah, every 2 years, we have a meeting that takes place in people's neighborhoods. And it's usually at their local school, and they choose a handful of people to represent them in the county convention and in the state convention as delegates.
But those people are like they're like their neighbors, right? It's not like some muckety muck.
Correct. So it's their neighbors. It's people in their neighborhood that they already know and are familiar with. And these people maybe have said, you know, this year I have a little bit more time for civic service and for being involved and for vetting and learning about the candidates, because we're all super busy. And sometimes you don't have the time to learn about the six different offices you're going to vote for, the 10 different big things you're going to vote for this year. And the delegates, they help whittle it down. They identify the candidates, their values, and they kind of take what the message and the consensus is from your neighborhood, and they cast that vote in that direction. And so that's the thing that is really nice about the process. I mean, you can see younger voters, 18, 19-year-old, get elected as delegate. You can see older voters get elected as delegate. It's not really, it's not a difficult process to get into and to hold this sort of representative position on behalf of your neighborhood. For it's very easy to get in and do that if you really are motivated and want to, because it's kind of a little mini election there with your neighbors, just them saying, hey, who do we want to help really narrow down the field? Because does everyone in the neighborhood, are they really going to take the time, or do they want to make the time to know every single candidate for state legislature? I mean, you'll get seats where you have 5-10 people running for a single seat. And if you have 3 or 4 of those elections, I mean, that easily gets to 30-40 candidates that you're vetting. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot to ask of the regular voting public. And so the voting public kind of wants to take it down, you know, whittle it down, maybe iron out between a couple of candidates in each race, and then make their vote. And I think the caucus convention system just really acknowledges and understands that natural fatigue that exists with our regular voting public. And hey, and for example, so a lot of times I just want to be the regular voting public. You know, I have busy seasons of my life, busy years. And I'm like, you know, the delegates are going to handle that. And then when it comes down to the actual primary or the general election, I'm happy to do my homework at that point.
Right.
But we have busy years and not as busy years. And so it just makes sense to let people that have the time and want to make the time have that opportunity to do that.
Right. Well, a couple of years ago, we had, 10 people running for senator? how do those 10 candidates actually get their message out to the general public, right? And do you, I mean, people get annoyed with all of the robocalls and the flyers and everything anyway. And if you multiply that by 5 or 10, it's just like, yeah, I just want to shut it off, right?
The big thing you're touching on for me, the thing that I care most about in the caucus convention system, people will say, and this might be a position you have, I don't know, but people will say the delegates are more informed, therefore, you know, it's a better system. I do think that can be debatable. I've seen opportunities where the delegates maybe have swung one way or swung the other based on very little information in a last minute convention attack or things like that. Mm-hmm. I do see that happen, but the greatest strength of the caucus convention system is how much money it keeps out of politics. And it requires powerful politicians to be held accountable to a small group that is much more difficult to manipulate or to buy off. Now, we have seen candidates in the past really work the convention system, and they were able to kind of influence it with millions of dollars, but that is really, really hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Big names in Utah politics, Mia Love, Jason Chaffetz, Chris Stewart, Rob Bishop, these are all people who got elected through the convention process and didn't spend. I mean, at this point in the election cycle, in March, April of their respective years, the first years they ran, they spent less than $100,000 to make their case, which for a congressional campaign is unheard of.
Right.
In other states. I mean, other states at this point, you're typically spending $300,000-$500,000 just spending to get to this point. And that's 4 or 5 candidates spending that much. So the voters are getting bombarded with millions of dollars of mail and advertising and signs and everything else. And in Utah, we've been able to mitigate that mm-hmm. until recently with the changes with the
right.
with the law.
Yeah. But that's what I saw. Now, you and I both ran for school board, which is completely outside of that. But that's what became very apparent to me was in order to get the message out, for school board, at least in Utah, because it's nonpartisan, it was very, very difficult. You had to spend a lot of money. Because there wasn't an organization that would help you. There weren't people that you knew who to contact to say, hey, are you interested in school board? But as a delegate, you know, these candidates are looking at a list of people and they, you know, this year I'm a delegate. And so I am being emailed specifically by these candidates saying, I'm having this town hall meeting. Here's my website. Here are my positions. And the number of candidates that will actually call you on the phone and talk to you. I was on a town hall meeting just on Saturday with one of our candidates for governor, who said, here's my personal cell phone. If I didn't get to your question, please call me. So I did. And we talked for 30 minutes. Well, it's a two-way street because I'm able to inform the candidate about information that I am aware of from my perspective. And they're also able to communicate with me and we can delve down on some very specific issues. Well, here's my perspective on this. And it goes much deeper than just, you know, a bumper sticker campaign slogan, right?
Totally. Well, and I've run for a school board seat, which was with the general election voting public, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've run in the convention process for the county commission seat and also for chairman of the Republican Party. And for both of those, there's such a difference in the experience. Number one, with the when I was running as a commissioner candidate, it was every single night there was a cottage meeting in someone's home or a town hall at a community center. And every single night there was a minimum of 20 to 30 people there to ask questions and get to know me. And for me to get to know them. And that was every single night. And mm-hmm. there were some times where there were 500 people there. I'm not even joking.
Wow.
And you would get up to that once I moved through the convention process and it went to the primary, for the next 2 months, the largest crowd that was ever there to vet candidates was at a debate, and there were about 20 people there. And there was, in every single cottage meeting that I held and town hall, there were less than five people at each of those. And I had to stop holding them because nobody was showing up.
Right.
And so that was a larger voter base.
Right.
There were 1,600 delegates, and I got to talk to and meet with most of them. And with the voting public, there were, 150,000, 200,000 registered Republican voters voting in our primary. And I literally had maybe contact with 50 or 60 of them.
Wow.
Like direct contact.
Direct, yeah.
It was just because, and the only way to contact them was to send them mailers, to do robocalls, to put up billboards.
And signs.
Put up my signs everywhere, litter my signs everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only way. And what does a sign tell you?
Hi, this is my name. Vote for me.
my sign, I've since learned, was a bad color. I mean, I went with red. I don't know why. I like the color red. And... but the guy I was running against had like a white and blue and red and, you know, mostly white sign. And he came across so soft and nice and warm. And, you know, and I had my harsh red sign.
So, we're making decisions based on color.
Yeah, they're picking sign color. And that's, I think, that for me, the thing that is legitimately a problem. It's not that the voting public is dumb or less smart than a delegate. It's just that the time investment is different.
Right.
They're spending a different amount of time and energy on the process. The voting public, when they engage or want to vet something, I actually have tremendous trust of the voting public. They just are busy with their lives.
Right.
And so and you have to have a lot of money to put mail in front of them. To send a mailer to every single delegate is maybe $1,000. To send a mailer to every single Republican household in Utah County, I mean, we were getting into $30,000, $40,000,
$50,000
to do that.
Wow.
And that's just one piece. You
right.
know? And so if that's... you want to do what they recommend, which is seven pieces, for a county commission campaign, you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now, nobody does that.
Right.
And so what ends up happening is people each spend maybe, you know, $70,000 on these races, and then nobody really knows what they're voting for. And how often do people walk in the voting booth, look down at the names, and they're like, I don't know any of these, you know.
Right.
Meeny, meeny, miny, moe.
This already puts in place what people generally do, right? There are people that you call up and you say, okay, tell me what your position is or what your thought is on this candidate. Because there are certain people in your neighborhood that are paying attention because everybody else is busy, like you said. And so, you know, I mean, it's the same reason why I go to the grocery store and I am not a farmer. We all kind of divvy things up. And when it comes to public service and civics, the idea of government by the people is just that we kind of trade it off, you know. I shouldn't be the same, you know, you shouldn't be voting for me every year to be whatever I am. It should be traded off. And this delegate process kind of allows that. So 1 year I'm the delegate and the next year you're the delegate and the next year it's the person across the street. And we kind of break up the responsibility. And then the brilliance of it, at least the few times that I've been a delegate, I have people in my neighborhood that will call me and say, okay, you've interviewed these people, and my first year as a chair of my neighborhood, precinct chair is what we call it. I put together a blog, and I had all of the delegates, you know, post your opinions on the blog for the people of our neighborhood, so that even if you were going to vote against the person that I supported, because I've interviewed all the people, I at least can give you the information so that you know which of those people you prefer. So I may narrow it down for you as a delegate, but generally you're going to end up with two people at the primary that, you know, that you're going to have to choose between. And so I may not agree with your decision, but at least you have that information from me about, you know, this person's stronger on these areas and this person's stronger on these other areas. And, you know, and people naturally are doing that anyway. And this just gives the people in every neighborhood access to the governor, to a U.S. senator, to a U.S. congresswoman or man. I heard a candidate for governor the other night on a town hall. Another gentleman who's a delegate gave him some information and he said, oh, that's wonderful. He says, you just connected some dots for me. Well, that's the other side of it that we don't see is it's not about just voting and walking away. It's that to be in a position of public service, of an elected position, you have to have access to a lot of information, and you get that information from the people that you represent. And so you have to have that dialogue that's coming along, because otherwise, you know, you always hear the critique, well, we elect this person and they sound really good, and then they go off to Washington or the Capitol, and then they forget, you know, where they came from. Well, it's because who are they surrounded by? They're surrounded by lobbyists. They're surrounded by advisors.
Consultants.
Yeah,
and they never actually, so in most states, just like I described when I was in the primary phase of the campaign, I interacted with just a few dozen voters. It was there was not a lot of natural interaction. There wasn't a lot of stuff that was facilitated in general. It just wasn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so who are you dealing with, you know, when you're the elected official? Well, you're dealing with the other people that you serve in the committees with or on boards with. You're dealing with non-elected staff. You're dealing with the agencies and the bureaucracies. Those are the people you're going to lunch with. Those are the people you naturally are going to build relationships there.
Right.
And so the way a metric of accountability is bringing you back home and making, you know, having a well-known senator, you know, having Senator Orrin Hatch come back to regular old voter me, you know, and mm-hmm. having to sit down and answer my questions, that's really powerful. You
it
know,
is.
I mean, I was 22 years old and I mattered to Orrin Hatch, you know,
right.
I had to be listened to. And that's important in the process. You know, you matter to the politician, you know, and I'm not saying you matter or not. I'm not going to speculate on that, on how they actually feel. But just with regards to that process, it really made you have to, you know, make that contact and that connection and answer the questions. And even if the delegate's not going to vote for you, I mean, you should get in the hot seat for a second and have to answer.
Yeah. Why did you vote this way on this? And you ran on this, but you know that there's that accountability.
You've asked for a job, especially if you're like a member of Congress or senator or something. I mean, you've asked for a job, or really many of these jobs, because you have taxing authority over people. You've applied for a position that puts you in a position of power over your neighbor and over people in your community. They are completely within their right to ask you questions.
Oh, I love that.
Good. Yeah, and you shouldn't be removed from that and be able to hide behind millions of dollars of TV ads and mailers and everything else that's built in to keep the status quo going. And that's the big thing for me. The proof is in the pudding. You look at the monetization of politics in Utah just in the last few years, and it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's gone up
you see significantly. The amount of money that has to now be spent, and it's because that's just the way it is. I mean, people also don't know. The signature gatherer that shows up at your door, that person, I know you don't want to get into this, but
yeah.
I'll just mention this. That person is usually getting paid anywhere from $4 to $15 for your signature. And you're a sale for them, basically. They go back and that signature has value. And so that then is another expense. And that's another person on your door. You know, do people really want that? I just don't know if people really are going to want this.
right.
to be anything but a representative sort of delegate system with a caucus and a convention and a fair and open vetting. And we can continue to improve those processes. We can continue to make the caucus night more efficient and a better process and a better experience for people. But you just make little adjustments and make sure that there's responsiveness to their neighbors and, you know, and all of that.
It's just one of those things where people have to come back and be accountable, and they don't hide behind millions of dollars. Yeah. I mean, that concept alone, I know I asked my mom years ago, because she told me that as a neighborhood, the little neighborhood that I grew up in, she had a handful of neighbors where they would do this. It was just their own grassroots. I don't know how many there were, 10 of them or something like that. It wasn't a formal thing, but every election they would divide up the candidates, and one of them would contact this person and one of them would contact that person. And then they'd take one night and they'd get back together and they'd say, okay, this is what I found out from so-and-so, and this is what I found out from so-and-so. And so they didn't have to agree on who they were going to vote for, but they were more informed. And we have this wonderful process here. And I think Utah is one of the last states that still does this. And it's sad to me that we lose it, because we haven't properly educated people on the benefits of it. And the other thing that I think is fascinating is just the reach, right? Because, like, say you're running for governor. Okay. If you're running for governor and it's the regular process, you know, that's just marketing, you just send your mailers out to the far reaches of the rural communities, right? You don't ever have to meet with people who are there in the rural communities. You never have to find out that their issues are different from the cities. I mean, everybody knows that they are, but how are they different? And yeah. And I love the idea that you've got, you know, a sitting governor or a sitting senator who's having to travel the entire state and spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours in a high school gym one Saturday afternoon talking to average people who said, hey, I have time, I'll come in and I'll talk to them. They get the information and they start to realize that what they're being told by their consultants might not actually be what the average person in the state is thinking.
Absolutely. And it does inform policy, and it does make them, I've also seen a gradual increase in the last 10 years that I've been involved of when a politician doesn't have to go through the caucus or the convention process, they're a little bit more willing to kind of be brazen with their attitude towards the public, towards votes, because they kind of feel invincible, you know, like they get to hide behind a lot of money and support from kind of within the political establishment. And rather than just kind of having the true servant's heart, which is, okay, I'm going to go through this process. The public may like it. They may not. I'm going to vote how I think is right. And then I'm going to make my case to the public, and like it or not, you know, we go through the process. And it's okay. Like, this isn't about power. This is about representing the constituents' wants and the voters' wants and what we believe in. And so that's my take. And I think the caucus convention system just really brings that way closer to home. I mean, I was. By 22, I knew I was on a face recognition basis with every significant elected official in the state. And it's not because I came from money. I was a nobody. I mean, total nobody. My parents both moved to Utah in their early 20s. They were converts to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We had no family connections or relationships. There was no money growing up. We moved several times, you know, like it just wasn't really like I wasn't set up or plugged in with anybody, but what happened was I felt, drawn into the process, and I was like, I want to make a difference. And it was so interesting. I walked through the door of politics, you know, figuratively. And I looked around, I was like, there's really not a lot of people here. I could make a lot of difference if I want to. And that's what I feel like I've been able to do. And that's what a person can do. You can find a lot of ability to contribute and help and make a difference because, and so we shouldn't just leave it to just the handful of people who are behind the scenes. You know, we should jump in and join in.
Right. And everybody can. There have been a couple of criticisms of the caucus. One is that it takes away the voice of the people and that the people who are elected are generally more extreme. Do you have a thought on either of those criticisms or how to mitigate those?
No, I don't think that's the case. You know, I was definitely the conservative candidate in my commission race 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the delegates, interestingly, they went 4% more. They're at choice. And he ended up going on and beating me in the primary. And so that does happen. I don't know if my experience with the convention system is they get their opportunity to vet. And mm-hmm. you know, they looked at me and they looked at him and they ultimately felt that, you know, I was going to go in and be too mean to UTA or whatever. and they decided to go with the other guy, you know.
And that's fair.
That's their call, you know. And so that's the voters and the delegates' call. And so I just don't like the notion. I think the notion is inaccurate. You know, there's a lot of, you look at, you know, Mike Leavitt became governor on the through the caucus convention system.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Herbert's been reelected. We've seen, of course, Governor Huntsman was in through the caucus convention system. So interestingly, too, people also will always say, well, Mike Lee's the reason because, you know, he got in and he was a super conservative and blah, blah, blah. Well, actually, Mike Lee scraped by at convention. He barely survived at convention. He got 40% of the vote. Tim Bridgewater got 59%.
But then the public chose Mike in the primary.
Yeah, and then Mike ended up barely edging out the win in the primary. It was the primary voters that went with the more conservative candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I this notion is silly. The voters are going to do what they're going to do, and we need to, it's not about gaming the system to have it be more conservative or what. For me, I think the money in politics is bad. I think it creates bad precedents. There's too many people that the politician owes favors to.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So just trying to keep money as low as possible in that political process as you can.
Right. And the accountability, you know, back to then they have to come back after they've served their term if they want to be reelected. And they have to look some of the same people in the eye and say, yeah, I did this and these are the reasons why. And
exactly.
And I think that's a great thing. Because like you said, then I'm going to hold on to that. Then they're not hiding behind millions of dollars of campaign ads.
Exactly.
I mean, that's awesome. Well, Casey, thank you. This has been very, very helpful. I'm going to go back and listen and get that phrase down. But that's essentially what we're saying when it comes to that grassroots meet, look people in the eye and hold them accountable, is that it circumvents the need for lots of money. And it puts it into a real human-to-human, face-to-face scenario that makes it more available to the average person who may just want to serve.
Exactly.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Wendy.
This has been the Family Freedom Podcast with Wendy Hart. Follow this podcast, share with your friends and neighbors, and add to the voices of family and freedom.